Down and Out in Paris and London by George Orwell. The Rue du Coq d'Or, Paris, 7 a.m. A succession of furious, choking yells from the street. Madame Mons, who kept the little hotel opposite mine, had come out onto the pavement to address a lodger on the third floor. Her bare feet were stuck into sabots, and her grey hair was streaming down. Madame Mons, "Sacré salope! How many times have I told you not to squash bugs on the wallpaper? Do you think you've bought the hotel, eh? Why can't you throw them out of the window like everyone else? Espèce de traînée!" The woman on the third floor, "Va donc, vieille vache!" Thereupon a whole variegated chorus of yells, as windows were flung open on every side and half the street joined in the quarrel. They shut up abruptly 10 minutes later, when a squadron of cavalry rode past, and people stopped shouting to look at them. I sketch this scene just to convey something of the spirit of the Rue du Coq d'Or. Not that quarrels were the only thing that happened there, but still, we seldom got through the morning without at least one outburst of this description. Quarrels, and the desolate cries of street hawkers, and the shouts of children chasing orange peel over the cobbles, and at night loud singing and the sour reek of the refuse carts made up the atmosphere of the street. It was a very narrow street, a ravine of tall, leprous houses lurching towards one another in queer attitudes, as though they had all been frozen in the act of collapse. All the houses were hotels and packed to the tiles with lodgers, mostly Poles, Arabs and Italians. At the foot of the hotels were tiny bistro, where you could be drunk for the equivalent of a shilling. On Saturday nights, about a third of the male population of the quarter was drunk. There was fighting over women, and the Arab navvies who lived in the cheapest hotels used to conduct mysterious feuds and fight them out with chairs, and occasionally revolvers. At night, the policemen would only come through the street two together. It was a fairly rackety place, and yet, amid the noise and dirt, lived the usual respectable French shopkeepers, bakers and laundresses and the like, keeping themselves to themselves and quietly piling up small fortunes. It was quite a representative Paris slum. My hotel was called the Hôtel des Trois Moineaux. It was a dark, rickety warren of 5 stories, cut up by wooden partitions into 40 rooms. The rooms were small and inveterately dirty, for there was no maid, and Madame F., the patronne, had no time to do any sweeping. The walls were as thin as matchwood, and to hide the cracks they had been covered with layer after layer of pink paper, which had come loose and housed innumerable bugs. Near the ceiling, long lines of bugs marched all day like columns of soldiers, and at night came down ravenously hungry, so that one had to get up every few hours and kill them in hecatombs. Sometimes when the bugs got too bad, one used to burn sulphur and drive them into the next room, whereupon the lodger next door would retort by having his room sulphured and drive the bugs back. It was a dirty place, but homelike, for Madame F. and her husband were good sorts. The rent of the rooms varied between 30 and 50 francs a week. The lodgers were a floating population, largely foreigners, who used to turn up without luggage, stay a week and then disappear again. They were of every trade, cobblers, bricklayers, stonemasons, navvies, students, prostitutes, ragpickers. Some of them were fantastically poor. In one of the attics there was a Bulgarian student who made fancy shoes for the American market. From 6 to 12 he sat on his bed, making 12 pairs of shoes and earning 35 francs. The rest of the day he attended lectures at the Sorbonne. He was studying for the church, and books of theology lay face down on his leather-strewn floor. In another room lived a Russian woman and her son, who called himself an artist. The mother worked 16 hours a day, darning socks at 25 centimes a sock, while the son, decently dressed, loafed in the Montparnasse cafes. One room was let to 2 different lodgers, one a day worker and the other a night worker. In another room a widower shared the same bed with his 2 grown-up daughters, both consumptive. There were eccentric characters in the hotel, The Paris slums are a gathering place for eccentric people, people who have fallen into solitary, half-mad grooves of life and given up trying to be normal or decent. Poverty frees them from ordinary standards of behaviour, just as money frees people from work. Some of the lodgers in our hotel lived lives that were curious beyond words. There were the Rougiers, for instance, an old ragged, dwarfish couple who plied an extraordinary trade. They used to sell postcards on the Boulevard Saint-Michel. The curious thing was that the postcards were sold in sealed packets as pornographic ones, but were actually photographs of chateaux on the Loire. The buyers did not discover this till too late, and of course, never complained. The Rougiers earned about 100 francs a week, and by strict economy managed to be always half-starved and half-drunk. The filth of their room was such that one could smell it on the floor below. According to Madame F., neither of the Rougiers had taken off their clothes for 4 years. Or there was Henri, who worked in the sewers. He was a tall, melancholy man with curly hair, rather romantic-looking in his long sewerman's boots. Henri's peculiarity was that he did not speak, except for the purposes of work, literally for days together. Only a year before he had been a chauffeur, in good employ and saving money. One day he fell in love, and when the girl refused him, he lost his temper and kicked her. On being kicked, the girl fell desperately in love with Henri, and for a fortnight they lived together and spent 1,000 francs of Henri's money. Then the girl was unfaithful. Henri planted a knife in her upper arm and was sent to prison for 6 months. As soon as she'd been stabbed, the girl fell more in love with Henri than ever, and the two made up their quarrel and agreed that when Henri came out of jail, he should buy a taxi and they would marry and settle down. But a fortnight later, the girl was unfaithful again, and when Henri came out, she was with child. Henri did not stab her again. He drew out all his savings and went on a drinking bout that ended in another month's imprisonment. After that, he went to work in the sewers. Nothing would induce Henri to talk. If you asked him why he worked in the sewers, he never answered, but simply crossed his wrists to signify handcuffs and jerked his head southward towards the prison. Bad luck seemed to have turned him half-witted in a single day. Or there was R., an Englishman, who lived 6 months of the year in Putney with his parents and 6 months in France. During his time in France, he drank 4 litres of wine a day and 6 litres on Saturdays. He had once travelled as far as the Azores because the wine there is cheaper than anywhere in Europe. He was a gentle, domesticated creature, never rowdy or quarrelsome, and never sober. He would lie in bed till midday, and from then till midnight he was in his corner of the bistro, quietly and methodically soaking. While he soaked, he talked, in a refined, womanish voice, about antique furniture. Except myself, R. was the only Englishman in the quarter. There were plenty of other people who lived lives just as eccentric as these. Monsieur Jules, the Romanian, who had a glass eye and would not admit it. Fourreur, the Limousin stonemason. Roucole, the miser. He died before my time, though. Old Laurent, the rag merchant, who used to copy his signature from a slip of paper he carried in his pocket. It would be fun to write some of their biographies if one had time. I am trying to describe the people in our quarter not for the mere curiosity, but because they are all part of the story. Poverty is what I am writing about, and I had my first contact with poverty in this slum. The slum, with its dirt and its queer lives, was first an object lesson in poverty, and then the background of my own experiences. It is for that reason that I try to give some idea of what life was like there.